It is Ireland's Classic Hits Radio, Trina Mara, and I'm delighted to welcome Emma Sides to the show today. She loves marrying people legally, and she's a human celebrant, which has become just massive in Ireland. But also, you do funerals and memorials and end-of-life doula support, so I'm intrigued to find out all about this. The whole thing has completely changed. How they want to get married, how they want their funeral done. They just kind of want a more personal ceremony, I think, don't they, Emma?
Yeah, Trina, thanks so much for having me. Yeah, things have changed a lot. So I've been a celebrant for 19 years now. And even just in that time, I've seen a lot of changes. So when we began, there were only literally a handful of celebrants in Ireland. Mm. Very few people would have had humanist funerals in particular, or non-religious funerals. So it has just gradually grown. And of course, we've seen such huge changes in Ireland over the past couple of decades. Marriage equality was a massive turning point because that just seemed to open people's eyes to all sorts of alternatives. But of course, also all of the different scandals in the church, just society changing, opening up more, you know, as different things became available, such as divorce, all those little things that gradually started to change people's opinions. And yes, I think people are very drawn towards ceremonies that are personal and that have them at their heart.
So, and originally when you were doing this 19 years ago, I mean, they wouldn't have been legally married, but people would have still gone for those ceremonies, and now they can be legally married.
Yeah, correct. So when people first did it, they would have been married in the registry office, perhaps that morning or the day before. But the actual ceremonies that we do are in fact still very much the same. The legal aspect is, from a practical point of view, quite a small part, although obviously very symbolically very important. So people do, of course, like to be legally married all at the same time. And yeah, all the humanist celebrants were all legal solemnizers, and that's obviously added a lovely extra dimension to our work because it allows us to offer, you know, the full package. And of course, people can be married for the most part in the venue of their choice. So they're just really lovely ceremonies. They're very relaxed, very warm, very personal. And also from a very practical point of view, they make things quite easy because you're usually being married in the same venue that you're having your reception.
Yeah, so everyone's in the one place and you can feed them and get the party started earlier. And the thing is, don't forget the green folder. It's very, very important. Emma, you must say this to couples all the time.
I do. And I always phone people a few days before their wedding. And the main reason I phone is to remind them about the green folder. I'm pleased to say that in the past few years, nobody's forgotten them. But in the first couple of years, I did have at least five or six couples who forgot them. And that did mean we always managed to sort it out. There was a lot of panic at the time and on the day. So thankfully, that hasn't happened for quite a while. But yes, we are a little bit paranoid about the green folders.
How does it work for you then, Emma, when you meet a couple? And we'll talk about the funeral and memorials that you do as well. But when you meet a couple who are getting married, you want to really kind of get to know them to make the ceremony as special and as personal to them. So like you meet up, I assume, a few months before the wedding. And how do you get to know them or find out what they want?
Sure. So I have a particular way of working, which is I don't have any kind of set script. So I send my clients lots of documents that relate to the different parts of the ceremony. So, you know, the welcome and introduction, the vows and rings, etc. And I give them lots of choices for each part. And then they take time to read over that. And then we meet and we chat and we discuss everything in detail. And then I get them to tell me little bits and pieces about themselves as well. So I don't generally do like people's entire love story. I don't think anyone needs to be hit over the head necessarily with every last detail of your romance. But what's nice is to have those little bits and pieces, like a few things you love about each other, a few things that drive you crazy, you know, some nice practical things about stuff you have in common, all that kind of stuff. But because my couples choose every word that is said on the day, because I give them, like I said, lots of things to choose from, and they add in their own bits as well when they want to, and they choose all their readings, they choose any ritual things they want to do, like maybe a hand fasting or a candle lighting, those sorts of things. Because they choose everything, the ceremonies really reflect them, and that's what really comes across on the day. And people really respond to that, because nothing I say is out of keeping with the character, if you like, or the values or the views of the couple, because they've chosen every word. That's how I work, and that's really important to me, because I really want people to have that choice. Because obviously I don't, even though you have a good chat with people, you still don't, of course you don't actually know them. So I want them to, and it's not that they have loads of work to do. I make it really easy, just in case anyone's panicking. I make it really easy. But it's just really important. And that, like I said, it really reflects the couple and people really respond to that.
I think the nice thing about these ceremonies is there's a bit of life in them and it's not drab.
Absolutely.
Yeah. How many weddings have you been to where you've been like, oh, when is this bit going to be over? So there's definitely a bit of life in the ceremony.
Very much so. So my ceremonies, yeah, they take sort of 25, 30 minutes. Nothing is said for the sake of being said. Everything, you know, has a reason. Don't bang on about stuff or give, there's no equivalent of a sermon. I'm not preaching to anyone or telling them, you know, what I think about marriage, so to speak. It's not like that at all. Very lively, very warm, lively, formal where it needs to be. Of course, it is a legal ceremony, so it's a little bit of formality, but we always have lots of crack and just very relaxed as well, because people can be nervous. You know, it's a big day. And obviously, most people, thankfully, just do it once. So, it, you know, it's a big, big occasion in people's lives. So I work very hard. I'm very good at making people feel very calm because there's no big instructions. A human ceremony is very straightforward. And the most complicated thing I say to anyone on the day is, the two of you would like to stand and turn and face each other, please. And that's about as complicated as the instructions get. So it's very, very chilled and relaxed. And then again, also the fact that, most of the time it's a little bit later in the day. People have had loads of time to get ready. Like I said, a lot of the time we're in the venue already, so there's no panicking or rushing about to get from A to B. A lot of people have been there the night before already anyway. So like people are actually on site.
Do you know what's nice as well? Sometimes there are rules when it comes to music. And if you're a music lover at a humanist ceremony, you can play whatever you want. You can play whatever music you like.
Yes, absolutely. I've had the Star Wars. One of the march. They were really into Star Wars and they had a helium balloon of Darth Vader and they wanted to carry him up the aisle, but the wedding was in City Hall and they don't allow helium balloons in City Hall. So Darth Vader was outside and I could see him bobbing about in the window as I did the ceremony. But music very much up to the couple. Most people have live music, which is just lovely. And obviously musicians are great at playing what people would like, but we always fly the flag for live music, you know, obviously where budgets allow, because it really does add to the atmosphere of the ceremony. And there are obviously tons of wonderful musicians around, everything from like a classical guitar to a string quartet to a harpist to ukulele players, the Dublin Gospel Choir. You know, there's a huge range of music and all of it always sounds, you know, wonderful on the day.
And Emma, have you seen people bringing the pets in? Sometimes you see that in photographs, people include the family dog.
Yes. Yes, I've had dogs bring the wedding rings up the aisle. Generally, yes, lots of dogs. There's a lovely venue in Louth called Seagrave Barns and they have a llama and the llama will bring your wedding ring up the aisle for you if you really want. I'm maybe not super keen on the llama. I'm not a massive animal person in that regard. But yes, no, dogs, definitely. And we always mention people's pets as well. Like, so if people have a pet who can't be there, always get a mention in the ceremony because obviously they're such a huge part of people's lives.
I could just imagine the dog hair all over everybody's suit.
Yes, someone's dog did pee on their dress once.
Lovely. Yeah. Think about that before you bring your dog to your wedding. Now, Emma.
Well, it's something to consider.
Emma, I want to talk to you about the other ceremonies that you do. Now, you do funerals and memorials as well as weddings. Again, a completely different ceremony, isn't it, when it's done in a human way?
Yes. So this doesn't sound strange, but I love doing funerals because they are so meaningful and it's such a privilege to be a funeral celebrant. So humanist funerals are like, I guess, probably the best way to describe them for somebody who hasn't been to them is they're a little bit like an extended eulogy. And obviously most people will be most familiar with a Catholic funeral because that obviously would be the majority of them. And in the Catholic funeral, obviously the primary purpose of the funeral is the Mass. And that's fine, that's as it should be. But there's very little space for the person in a Catholic Mass because that's not what it's about. And like I said, that's how it should be, that's what it is. So often there is a eulogy, but of course not always, you're not always allowed to do them. But that's a tiny portion of the service, whereby the humanist service, like all our ceremonies, they have people at their heart. So the person who has died is at the heart of the service. My job as a celebrant is to help their family, their friends, to say goodbye in the way that's right for them. So sometimes there could be three or four people speaking, there could be more, there could be less. Sometimes it's just me. I would give the whole eulogy where the family, for whatever reason, or don't feel able to speak. But always we're trying to get to the heart of the person. So we're looking at the different aspects of their life. So for instance, their career would have been very important to them. So you might have somebody speaking about their work life. You might have maybe a sibling speaking about them in terms of their child. childhood, you might have a friend. Then, of course, if they were married or they had children, then you would have that aspect of their lives. So you're always looking to find out about the different aspects of a person's life and to kind of address those aspects. And I also think as well that it kind of follows in the tradition of the wake. So if you think about an Irish wake, which of course I know doesn't happen as much anymore, but obviously the removal is a smaller version of that. But the wake was very much about celebrating the person. It was the secular part. And wakes way, like the Irish wake goes back, that tradition has existed for like thousands of years as far as I know, but a really long time. And obviously then in the 20th century, the church, the Catholic Church here, kind of took over a little bit. So you started at the beginning of the 20th century, you started having to have the body had to go to the church the night before.
That's right, yeah.
And so then the wakes became a little bit shorter. But the wake, therefore, was kind of the secular part. And then, of course, you had the church part where you had the church funeral. The humanist funeral follows in the tradition of the wake, because the wake was where you told stories, you shared memories, there was laughter, there was tears.
Yeah, exactly.
There was a combination. It was a combination of joy and sorrow. It was a celebration and an honouring of the person's life. So I think that the humanist funeral, like I said, very much follows in that tradition. And I also love the fact that as a woman, because women have always been very much involved with death, you know, women, it was the, you know, the women in the community who laid out the body, the women who organised a lot of that stuff. So I love, but I feel like I'm kind of following in that tradition.
So where does that happen? Where would a humanist funeral actually take place? Because if it's not in a church, where do you go, or how is that organised?
So most humanist funerals take place in the crematorium. Most who have humanist funerals are cremated, and so the services generally take place in the crematoriums. They also often take place in the actual funeral director's premises. So a lot of funeral directors have really lovely rooms that you can use. For bigger services, sometimes they take place, like I've done in the Royal Hospital in Kilmainham, where the Museum of Modern Art is. They have a beautiful big Baroque chapel there. I've done funerals in there. Those are some of the main places. Sometimes we do what we call where people want to be buried and they want to have a service, say, in a local hotel. We would go to the graveyard first, or even to the crematorium first, and have that part of the service first, and then have the main service in the hotel. There's lots of different options. Occasionally I've done it where the family have, they've just opted for like a private cremation, but then they've had kind of, I guess, a little bit, you might call it a memorial service because the person isn't present, but they have only been, they've only been buried, you know, that morning or the day before. But it just allows for a more relaxed atmosphere. You can have your refreshments then in the same space where you've had the actual service. Point is, there are lots of different options. Not everything suits everyone. So I will be someone in particular, will be very open to, you know, just to different options, different ways of doing things. But primarily, the majority that we do are held in the crematorium. So there are four main ones in Dublin. And then obviously there are one or two around the country. So a little bit, not so easy if you're not in Dublin. There's definitely not as much choice, but there are definitely options and ways around things, and there's always a way to do it.
Yeah. Do you know, I've only ever been to one humanist funeral, and it was about a year ago in Mount Jerome in the crematorium.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
And I came away and I said, this sounds terrible. That was a great funeral. And it was really just a real reflection of the person. And I didn't actually know the person who died that well, but I did know their family. And I just kind of thought, you really got to know the person. And it was a great laugh. The stories were fabulous. And it was just, it gave a real insight into their life, you know?
Yes. And that, again, one of the things I love best. So I love people. I love finding out about their lives. And I always say that if you go to a humanist funeral and you knew nothing about the person, you should walk away with a really strong sense of who they were.
Yeah, a lot of people do say, you know, when they die, they want their family to have a party. And that's kind of, I wouldn't say it's the humanist ceremony is a party, but it's certainly given you an idea who the person was and their likes and their interests and them playing the music that they loved and all that. You know, instead of being all about the doom and the gloom and the grief on the day, they are celebrating the person's life.
I think there should be a mixture. Of course, you're acknowledging grief. And of course, it also depends on the person and the circumstances of how they've died. Obviously, when somebody is young, you know, it just depends on the person. Obviously, some funerals are much sadder, of course, than others, depending on, like I said, on the circumstances. But there's always room for some laughter. There's always room for those little moments of joy in terms of remembering somebody, you know, a funny memory or a story or just something that brings a smile to your face. Like I said, we absolutely are acknowledging grief. And I think think it's really important to say that, like, humanist funerals are very dignified. They're a mixture. I think that's, and I think a good funeral should be a nice mix in that way. So you have both the formality and the grief that you need. And I would talk a little, you know, I talk a little bit about that. I talk a little bit, of course, about grief. And like I said, acknowledging grief, but then you are absolutely celebrating and honoring the person. And where it's appropriate, again, depending on the circumstances, even when I've done funerals where somebody has died by suicide or different things like that, where obviously people are particularly in shock or it's particularly difficult, there's still always room for a little bit of laughter, because that's not the sum total of who a person was, you know. You're not defined by that one moment in your life. So you're very much looking for the joy within the grief, for the memories that you've had. So it's a bit of both.
Yeah. And Emma, talk to me about your end-of-life doula support work that you do. And I've only heard of a doula when it comes to giving birth. I didn't know that there was such a thing for end-of-life support.
Yeah, so the first time I ever heard about a doula was exactly that, a birth doula. I had one when my second child was born. So I've always been interested generally in all things death-related. And I don't actually remember now where I first read about it, but I became interested in it. And I went to England and did training with, they're called Living Well, Dying Well, and they do a lot of training for doulas. There's not really much here. And yeah, the idea is that you're not a medical person, you're not a professional with like a capital P. Mm-hmm. It's very much about being one human being meeting another human being, the place that they're at, in this case, somebody who is dying, although they may not be dying, like they could have been just given a diagnosis. They might have many months to live, they might even have a couple of years to live. So there's lots of different ways that doulas support people, and it's something that actually we all do a version of it. If you've ever supported a family member or a friend, you know, who had been given a diagnosis of a terminal illness, and you've gone around and done housework for them, or you've helped them with paperwork, or you've just taken them out, or you've just gone around to sit with them, anything like that, that's what a doula does. So many people essentially function as doulas. Anyone who has supported, like I said, a friend or a family member has essentially been doing that. It's something that has always existed, just in the same way, you know, I was saying that women in particular have always been involved. When you think about a wake, the local women in your community or in your village, you know, helping with making the tea and the coffee and the sandwiches, laying out the body, all of those different things. So it's, again, it's part of that tradition. So it's very much just about, I guess, being somebody who's not afraid to talk about the fact that you're dying, be very comfortable with talking about death and what's going to happen. I suppose you're quite being reasonably matter of fact about things, because you're there to just help that person with whatever they need. So it might be planning their funeral. It might be helping them to plan, you know, how they're going to tell family members. It could be particularly, say, if somebody had children, it might be helping them to think about what they would like to leave for their children. It might be talking about practical things about how it might actually happen, you know, when they die. There's things, or that might be more talking to family members themselves and explaining what's happening when the person is coming towards the end of their life, the physical changes, things to expect. So there's lots of different aspects to it, but primarily, like I said, it's one human being meeting another person in the place that they're at and just being there as a support in whatever way that person needs. It might be as simple as saying, sit with your family, I'm going to put the dinner on. Okay. So you're not a medical professional. And in fact, a lot of the people who train, like a lot of people are, have a background maybe in psychology or social work, or they're nurses, and they're actually told, try to leave that at the door. That's not what you're there for. That's not your role. So you're not there to try to take over in any way from medical professionals. That's not your job. It's really just about support, and I guess primarily about being comfortable with the fact that this person is dying, and therefore not afraid to answer questions or maybe to bring things up that other people might find a little bit awkward to broach. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Is it generally people who don't have a family?
It could be anyone. It absolutely could be somebody without a family, but it also could be a family where they're maybe just generally finding it difficult to cope, and you can be a kind of a neutral presence who can help to just answer questions, just be there to give a little bit of practical support. It really does vary.
And can it be awkward for you, because you're obviously a stranger in their life, coming in at this time in their life, which is very, very difficult. Does it ever feel awkward for you or for them? Or
while I have trained, I haven't worked with that many people. Yeah. But yes, it can be. It's no different in a way than meeting a family. When you're planning a funeral, there can be all sorts of complex family dynamics. There can be a lot of people in the room. Sometimes you might be meeting with one person. Sometimes you could be meeting with 8 or 9 people, all of whom have had a different relationship to the person who has died. So yeah, I guess that's part of the job. That's part of the training, and that's part of being the kind of person who would like to do this, which I do. it's because I like people and I like being with people and meeting people. One of the things I would hope, and I like to think I'm good at, is putting people at their ease in difficult situations.
I guess, Sammy, you never know what you're going to get when you're meeting a couple who are getting married, when you're arranging a funeral or a memorial. You just don't know what you're going to be met with. So you have to kind of adapt with everything. Does this ever affect you when you go home, when you've done a funeral or you've done, particularly like that, what you said, if it might be a sudden death or a young person who's died? Or does it affect you? Or are you able to kind of switch off, like many medical people are able to switch off when they go home?
Yeah, I think the main thing that I always kind of remember is that it's not my grief. I find it quite easy in that way too. Like I don't tend to bring it home with me. Certain people stay with you, of course, and I've done funerals for a number of babies and I remember all of them. You don't forget the little ones. And I think of them. Like there was one little one and her mum and dad brought sunflowers up. Every time I see sunflowers now, she would just pop into my head. So she's always kind of there. And you do carry people with you, but you couldn't do this if you weren't able to separate yourself to some degree. I mean, I've been very, very moved, of course. I mean, I regularly am wiping away a tear when I'm actually doing a funeral service. How could you not? I mean, I've heard some, you know, beautiful eulogies that people have written. And then also, you know, some funerals have been quite heartbreaking. And obviously, of course, I keep it together. That's my job. But you wouldn't be human if you weren't moved to some degree. And then often I've read, I mean, one of the hardest things is where like a young person who's lost a parent, they write something and they give that to me to read on their behalf. Those can be hard to do because you're reading in that person's voice. I try very hard to make sure that I sort of do them justice. It's just such a privilege. I can't stress enough. It is a wonderful thing to do, to be able to help people at such a difficult time in their lives. I work really hard to try to capture the person as much as possible. So listening, you know, to everything that's being said, listening to what's not being said, you know, very aware of a set of family dynamics, of nuances, maybe what's going on. Obviously, we don't like to speak ill of the dead, but obviously nobody is perfect. And of course, some people will have had more complicated lives than others and will have left more complicated relationships behind them. I always encourage people to be honest as well. We don't have to whitewash a person or pretend that they were perfect. So yeah, we try to just be real, I suppose, and to be as honest as possible. But as you said, you never quite know what you're going to get. But then it's one of the things I I'm endlessly fascinated by people and glimpses into people's lives. You know, some funerals, people who were just so inspiring, just had such interesting lives. And then other people who didn't necessarily achieve things in the way that society perhaps qualifies achievements. Never forgotten doing a funeral for a woman. She didn't have an education. She had worked as a cleaning lady most of her life. You know, she wasn't successful in inverted commas by what we would define in terms of money or those sorts of things. But she had two nephews and she had helped to rear them. I've never forgotten how they spoke about her. She had such an impact on their lives and they loved her so much. I remember thinking, that's the legacy that I would want to leave. You know, yeah. She'd had this incredible impact on these two young men and they owed her so much and they spoke so beautifully about her. And I thought to me that was worth far more than the person who was, you know, had made a fortune or had the super academic career, even though don't get me wrong, those achievements are of course wonderful in themselves. But I loved the fact that what was most special about her was the love she had given to her nephews.
Yeah, isn't that interesting that had it not been a human, a ceremony, people may never have heard those stories or heard what she did for them, you know? So interesting. No. What an interesting job you have. Emma, thanks so much for coming on the show today and sharing all that with us. The website is emmasides.com. You can have a look there.
Correct.
You do naming ceremonies as well, which must be lovely.
Absolutely lovely.
Babies all around.
Babies all around. Fabulous way to welcome a little one into their community, into their family. They're really lovely.
Yeah.
And again, baby at the heart of it. Parents get to choose everything. Lovely reflection of a person's individual family, their family values. Very joyful, of course. Not too long. We know our audience. Not too long. But
baby needs to be fed.
And occasionally the babies aren't even there. They're fast asleep in a pram beside you. So sometimes they miss their own naming ceremonies. Miss their big moment. But yeah, no, the namings are lovely. Really nice.
Emma, take care of yourself. Thanks so much for coming on. Have
Not
a look
at all.
At the website. There's emmasides.com if you want to get any info on everything we spoke about today. It's Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.